Shanti, Shanti. Good afternoon. Greetings and salutations. I welcome you with all my heart. It is good to be with you once again. If you abide in the first principle, that everything is an emanation of the mind, and everything is preordained in your life, you would have no problems. Where can there be a problem when you realize that everything is preordained, predestined? And everything that is predestined in your life is projected through your mind. In other words, the world that you are seeing, observing, is simply your movie. You show yourself a movie whenever you stare at the world. And all the things that you see is your flick. It belongs to you. No one else. Everything. Nothing just happens. Everything has already happened. And you appear to be going through a movie where things appear to be happening. But you're really the projectionist. And you are projecting your fairy tale. The idea is to become free, to become liberated. But how can you become free and liberated when the world affects you? When you're always scheming and planning and criticizing, becoming angry, reacting, how can you become free? You become deeply involved in the situations of life as if they were going to last forever. You realize by now that the only thing permanent in life is change. No thing ever stays the same. So why identify with the external world? The wise person leaves the external world alone. They have very little to do with the external world. They have trained themselves that when they behold a situation, there is no reaction. No identification. You become no hurtable. You cannot be hurt any longer by words, by deeds, by whatever. Wherever you find yourself, you put yourself there. No one is responsible for what happens to you. the appearances that people seem to be responsible for. You always seem to be involved with people. Yet it's all planned. It's as if you were an actor and you are rehearsing for a play. Then you play the part. You do not really get angry at your co-actors. For you know it's a play, they're all playing a part. Life is like that. It's an act. Act one. How you come out of act one determines if you go back into act two or you become free of the whole thing. Act two is when you become reborn and go through further experiences. You're continuing the game. You have not learned to turn within. To dive deep within yourself and become free. You become attached to person, place, or thing. And again, you grow older, and it's time for Act Three. All of the time, you are responsible for your actions. If you would only leave it alone, if you can only understand, no one can really hurt you. No one can really do anything to you. The appearance may be that they can. But you should always hold in the deep recesses of your mind that it's only a play, an act. If you go through the play without reacting, you do not have to take on an acting job again. You become free. But if you insist on reacting, it makes no difference what the situation is. You are reacting when you have preconceived ideas. When you believe something has to be done a certain way. When you believe people want to hurt you. Things are wrong somewhere. When you're always scheming and planning and you're not spontaneous. That is acting. And of course, whenever you react, there'll be a further reaction from the other side. It never ends. It keeps on going. This is collective and individual. No thing is as it appears. Or it wouldn't change. The whole universe is a mirage on the screen of life. Everything is a mirage, including your body, your thoughts, your feelings. They're all a lie. and they do not really exist. When I go so far as to say that nothing really exists, I don't blame you for sort of becoming a little irritated with me. For I know that some of you have gone through life and you've been hurt. Certain things have transpired in your life. So how can I sit here and say that nothing exists? Try to remember that I'm not speaking from a book I read or what someone else told me. This has been my direct experience. There is no world. There never was a world. And there never will be a world. All of the psychotherapy you go through, all of the karma you go through, all of the perverse situations in life you go through, they do not exist. They never have existed and they never will exist. Yet the mirage is so strong that you're sitting here believing you are the body. No matter how many times I tell you, you are not the body, you are not the mind, you are not the doer, you always identify with yourself as the body. You can tell you're doing that because you're always thinking about yourself. When you're taking a walk, what do you think about? Yourself. True? Whatever you're doing, you're thinking about yourself. You may get lost sometime when you're watching TV, going to a movie, participating in the sport. But that doesn't last. When the movie is over, when the sport is over, when what you really got involved in is over, you're back to thinking about yourself. As long as you think about yourself as the body, you have to suffer. You have to go through experiences in life. That's what this world is all about for the deluded person. Experience after experience after experience. There's no end to it. Until the day comes when you get good and tired of the whole thing. This is why that some people really have to have their rug pulled from under them before they come around to this way of thinking. For as long as they're living a mediocre life, they don't have that many bad things happening in their life. They seem to be satisfied. And they keep searching for better humanhood. Not realizing that for every backward there's a forward, for every up there's a down. You have to experience all kinds of things when you identify with the body-mind phenomenon. Therefore, you should do the best you can to transcend that kind of thinking. And you do that by catching your thoughts. Catch yourself thinking about yourself, about your problems, about your family, about your needs, about something being wrong somewhere, about your doubts, your suspicions, your apprehensions. You have to realize that it doesn't matter what you're going through, physically, mentally, economically. Those things are all incidental. For instance, the body may be wasting away, getting older, dying from cancer. That doesn't make any difference. There's no difference between the person who has become emaciated, dying of cancer, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. They're both imposters. The problems begin when you take it to be seriously. When you want to be someone else, or you want a different kind of situation in your life, that's when the problem really begins. If you can only learn to abide in whatever situation you're in. What I mean by abide in every situation you're in, I'm referring to not reacting, not feeling sorry for yourself, or comparing yourself with someone else, but simply laughing at yourself, allowing to come with me, not fighting, not trying to get the best of someone else. I know what I am saying to some of you appears sort of stupid. For you say, if I don't stick up for my rights, people will step all over me. That will never happen. What is when you stick up for your rights and you appear to win, that you really have a problem. For you have to go through similar situations over and over again until you stop and leave things alone and simply not react. I am not referring to holding it in. If you hold in your fears, your problems, or whatever, you will blow up one day. And all sorts of things will happen. I am referring to transcending your life. Going into a different dimension. Seeing things in the fourth dimension. Rather than in the state of waking, sleeping, and dreaming. abiding in your real self. You abide in your real self when you become quiet, when thoughts stop. When people around you may be in chaos and confusion, they may be shooting at each other, wars may be going on, but you are still, you are quiet, you are not disturbed. You cannot make out you're like that when you're not. You cannot pretend that you are still and calm and peaceful when you really have a lot of anger in you and you're always sticking up for your rights and you believe people are trying to hurt you. You therefore have to work on yourself. Your body appears to be the factory, the laboratory, for you to experiment. There's only one way to go, and that's inwardly. Do not attempt to do anything in the world to become evolved. The world cannot do anything for you. It's only within your own self. Thursday night I mentioned that most people cannot practice self-inquiry because they have not come to terms with themselves. Meaning they have not as yet removed the anger, the doubts, the bad temper, the feelings. Those things have not as yet been removed. In order for you to go further, if you are really attached to this world, and you are when you have a bad temper, when you have to react all the time, when you think something is wrong, that's being attached to the world. It's going to be very difficult for you to practice self-inquiry. For your ego is so strong, it'll always pull you back to the situation in life that you're going through. Your job that you may hate. You're always thinking about that, always obsessed with family problems, bodily dysfunctions, lack or limitation, or an overabundance of things. When you own too many things, your mind is always thinking about the things you own. Whether you're going to lose them, whether you have to pay taxes on them. So it's just as bad as thinking about problems. As long as you're thinking at all, you're making a grave mistake. The mind has to become quiescent. It makes no difference what the situation is. So Thursday I mentioned you've got to put your house in order. before you really can get into self-inquiry. And I mentioned two things that a couple of people have reacted to me about. Ramakrishna used to talk about these things as woman and goal. Throughout Ramakrishna's writings, he says that woman and gold are the two things that keep you from becoming enlightened. People think he didn't like women, but he actually was referring to lust and greed. So some of you who called me believe I said that you're not supposed to be sexual in your life and you're not supposed to own anything. This is a mistake. There is nothing wrong with being sexual as long as you are in control of yourself. You've got to control your own body. If you're lustful, your body controls you. Some of us believe to be sexually active, we have to be lustful. This is not true. I can only use myself as an example. When I had my illuminating experience when I was 14 years old, the I thought was completely destroyed. When there is no I, you would say, then there is no one to be sexual. And the appearance would be you become asexual. This again is a mistake. The body is going to appear to go through many experiences. I got married, I have two daughters. But yet the I thought was not there. So again you may say, well Robert, if you became self-realized, you would have no interest in sex or anything else. This is a fallacy that only the Ayani would ask and feel. The body will always be active. It will always appear to be doing things. Whatever you have to do as a body will be done. But you do not think about it. Nothing is planned as far as the enlightened person goes. The sage plans nothing because the sage is not the body. Nor the mind. Yet the sage's body may appear to go through certain maneuvers, maybe work at a job. The body may appear to go through all kinds of things. (Clears throat) But the sage has absolutely nothing to do with them. This again is confusing. It appears that there are two people. It appears as if there's a sage and there's a Buddha, there's all kinds of things. But that's why I said it's an appearance. Just as Ramakrishna, Ramana Maharshi, and others appear to be dying a horrible death and wasting away, I want to inform you that no such thing happened. None of these things are happening. That's why you should never judge. Because you're judging from the viewpoint of the Ayani. In other words, you're seeing things with your Ayani eyes. And you're thinking how things are supposed to be. Now, as far as greed is concerned, it's the same thing. I do not mean when I say you should work on yourself to remove greed. I am not referring that you should sell your possessions and get rid of everything you own and own nothing. On the contrary, if you like a nice car, a nice home, antiques, there is absolutely nothing wrong with enjoying those things of the body as long as you're not attached to them. In other words, possess what you want, but never be possessed by your possession. You have absolutely nothing to do with it. The real you is free from the whole thing. As I'm trying to explain this, I'm talking about both worlds. The world of the body and the transcendental world. There's really one world. There is only ultimate oneness. But for the sake of trying to explain these things, I refer to the fact that you appear to have a body, but you are not the body. You are absolute reality. That is your state right now. Do not worship your body. See yourself for what you really are. If you're that far enmeshed in this world, again, self-inquiry will be difficult for you to do. That's when you sing bhajans and you have mantras. You chant, you practice pranayama, you do all these things to make your body pure enough so that you can practice self-inquiry. There's a story about the Buddha and a courtesan. One day the Buddha and his disciples were walking through the forest and they came to a town. In this town lived a beautiful courtesan who was a high-class prostitute. She had a beautiful home. And she was a lovely creature to behold. She had heard about the Buddha, how handsome he was, how strong of body. And she said to herself, I must have this person. This will be my ultimate conquest. So she sent the handmaidens out to fetch the Buddha. Bring him to me, she said. They approached the Buddha and they said, Master, our mistress wants to see you. Please come. When Buddha's disciples looked at the girls, they realized who they were. They were all prostitutes. And they began to chase them away. They said, how dare you approach our master like this? What kind of a person do you think he is? And the Buddha said, no, do not say anything harshly. I will go. The disciples were amazed. They didn't understand where he was coming from at all. But they knew enough to trust him because he was self-realized and they were not. He told them, wait here. And he followed the handmaidens to this beautiful home, mansion, castle. He approached the courtesan, and she was dressed in the finest clothes to entice him. She said, stay with me, and I will give you love beyond your wildest dreams. He smiled at her and he said, not now. She continued and said, I will give you riches you never had in your life. You will be treated like a king. Just stay with me. Again he said, not now. She continued by saying, I love you with all my heart. I will give myself totally to you. Just stay with me. And he answered, I love you also, but not now. This went on for hours. She finally realized it was no use. And he bid her farewell and went back to his disciples. They walked through the town and disappeared into the jungle. 30 years passed, and the Buddha and his disciples again came to that same town. All of a sudden, Buddha stopped and started to think, and he told the disciples, wait here for me, I have to go see my beloved. He walked to the part of town where this great mansion had been, and he found a pile of rubble. Everything was torn down. Everything was a mess. He inquired where the courtesan was, and someone pointed to the ground. And there she was, lying in the ground, in rags, with leprosy all over her body, wasting away. He went over to her and kneeled down and said, now I have returned for you. and I love you as you once loved me. He kissed her on the forehead. She was immediately healed. She understood. Her consciousness had risen. She followed the Buddha back through the forest with the disciples and became one of the living disciples of Buddha. This story tells you that nothing is the way it appears. When you attach yourself to someone or something, and you believe that's the thing that you have to have all of your life, you will always be disappointed. The safest thing you can do is to turn within. You should get rid of all of the undesirable traits you've got. Enough of them. Awaken from your sleep. Begin to inquire, to whom do all these feelings come? Who is going through? Karma, reincarnation, mental anguish. Who's going through all of this? I am. It is the I that is the culprit that's kept me in delusion all of my life. Now I'm going to trace that I, find out from whence it comes, and become free. Do it. Free to ask any questions.
If realization is all fullness and all bliss and all sufficiency, why would the Yani want to get married and have a family?
Gyani has nothing to do with that. This is why I say it's sort of difficult to understand. The body does this.
But if there's no mind, how would the body do it? If the mind is gone, who would do it?
The appearance is there. It's like when Ramana Maharshi was dying. Who was dying? A human being appeared to be dying. But he said, "You're making a mistake. There is nobody here dying." In the same way, a yoni appears as a body to some people. And the body appears to be doing certain things, getting married, having children, having a job, becoming a president.
But if there's no karma, what would impel the body to want to fulfill those things?
The body is not doing that. It appears to be doing that. This is the reason I always say, it is only an appearance.
So are there still karmas operators in the yoni?
There's no karma. There's nothing. There's nobody.
What determines the appearance then?
Nothing determines the appearance. Because nothing is going on. There's a complete blank.
Well, what determines how the nothing that's going on goes on?
Nothing determines what goes on, because nothing is going on. There's no determiner.
You just wiped it all out.
Yeah, but why would Yanni get married rather than just sit in one place in a cave? What makes it, what impetus, what motion is causing this to happen?
Why would Yanni sit in one place in a cave?
Well, some of them have.
The same reason. There's no difference to Yanni when he's sitting in the cave or he gets married. The difference that you see is in your mind.
Doesn't he prefer to get married rather than sit in the cave?
There's no preference whatsoever.
So why does he do it?
He doesn't.
There you go.
He appears to do it. You're seeing the appearance. That's your mind. Remember I told you the first principle in the beginning? Everything is an emanation of your mind. The appearance appears that way. But the reality is quite different. In the reality, there's nothing going on. It's like a mirage. You see the water and it's not there. It's like hypnosis. You're seeing the yoni with the body doing something. But no one is doing anything. Don't say nothing is reality because that implies reality is the same. There is only nothing. It is. Nothing comes after that.
It's a dream, Adam. It's a dream.
It's a dream, of course.
You can go through a dream, sir.
No.
You said everything is pure dream.
Everything is pure dream as long as you believe you are the body. Because when you get to the point where you realize you are not the body, there's no purity in it. There's no karma, there's no reincarnation. There's no God. All these things simply exist because you believe you are the body. That's why you have to realize that is your personal I that believes all these things. When you destroy the personal I, everything else is destroyed. Everything is attached to the personal I.
And that's based on the identification with the body.
Yes. So when identification with the I stops, there's no body, there's no mind, there's no world, there's no universe. There's no one looking to become self-realized. There's no liberation. There's nothing.
But that nothing is happiness, right? I mean, bliss or fullness, such a man, right?
That what you call nothing is beyond happiness and bliss. There are no words in the finite mind to describe it. You can't even imagine the bliss.
But for there to be anything, there has to be a someone to experience it.
Yes.
And what you're speaking of, there's no experience.
There's no experience, so how can you experience something?
But then you just become the bliss.
You do not become anything, because there has to be someone to become. Mm. And the bliss is the thing that you're describing. So that can't be the ultimate reality. That's why I always say the ultimate reality is silence. Total quietness. That's nothing.
In the silence, though, it's like being enveloped by something. bliss. I mean, he used the word bliss, that's fine, but there is something.
When you're involved in the silence by something, that is not the true silence.
So that's beyond, the true silence is beyond that feeling?
It's beyond that feeling. There's no feeling whatsoever. See, there has to be someone to have a feeling. As long as someone is feeling something, that's not it.
I've never experienced it. I can't say, but why would I choose something that isn't wonderful or blissful? Or, I mean, I haven't had the experience, obviously, then, because in the silence I've had a blissful feeling. I the presence of something.
The presence of something. The blissful feeling is only a part of it. But all that becomes transcendent. All that disappears. The true silence, which you're referring to, is a billion, jillion times greater than the bliss you're talking about. It is something so incomprehensible that if it came to you, your whole body would be destroyed. The body would not be able to handle it. That's why it only comes when you've had the realization that you're in the body. Because then there is no body that will be destroyed. It never existed, it's not going to be destroyed. But if you feel only a point before the bliss, or the nothingness, then your body can actually be destroyed by that.
Why would the body be destroyed? It would just be the identification with the body that would be destroyed.
So the body appears to be destroyed. It's an appearance.
It's not actually destroyed.
No. Because it never existed.
There we are. Back to ground zero.
See, this is sort of difficult to understand, to comprehend. But I can assure you that if you dive deep within yourself and you follow the I thought to its source, you will have happiness that you never dreamed existed. And you will have bliss that no word or feeling can ever describe. You will be in your true nature.
But there's still a you there?
No.
Were you?
I'm just using that word.
You were using it
to make you see what happens.
But that you must have disappeared.
You never is available. You is gone. There's no you. When I'm referring to experience to you, that's the only way you can do it, by using certain words.
Well, then there's no bliss or no anything.
There's no bliss as you know it.
There's nobody to know it.
There's nobody to know it.
So there's no knowing.
There's no knowing. There's just that.
Well, why talk about it?
Why ask?
Why are you talking? I'm just asking you a question.
It's not like an out-of-body experience.
On the contrary.
It's no experience at all.
Out-of-body experience is kindergarten.
Robert, some teachers talk about the Absolute as being experience without conceptualization, which differentiates it into an eye, into trees, and so forth. But what you're saying goes far beyond that. You're saying experience itself doesn't exist. Is that correct?
That's correct. There's no experience.
So you don't belong to the Douglas Harding group of yanis?
Douglas Harding has his own message. There has to be an experiencer to experience anything. When the experiencer has been transcended, there's no one to have any kind of experience. And that's total silence.
There's no experiencing so whatever.
No.
That's
it's all gone.
But yet you say it's a great happiness.
I'm trying to explain, because many people believe that it's a void. It's not a void. It's beyond that. There are no words to describe it.
Could you say that there's happiness itself without anybody to be happy?
No. Happiness is nothing compared to the experience.
Robert, if you gave up your body tomorrow, and you hear all the time on TV or radio, young people, children even going through the tunnel, and going through the tunnel in the near-death experience, or where they've been in an accident or whatever, on the operating room, you seems to be a great agreement about what happens of going through this very, very blissful state when they reach that near death or go to the other side. So back to you. If you left your body tomorrow, where would you be?
Where I am right now.
Nowhere. Now, without this body, and you passed on to the hunting ground to a different energy, would you still be aware that we peons are all down here sitting around waiting for you to show up?
I have not passed on anywhere.
No, I know.
I know. I will not be doing that because I would have to be an individual to see all you peons. You have to be a seer. An individual entity. But I am you. I have become you. The energy is your energy. Because there's only one energy.
You become back to... You just become another energy.
There's no other energy. I was never an energy to begin with. The self always remains the self. There's nowhere to go, and there's nothing to become.
So all these people who believe in some afterlife are going to be very disillusioned?
The people who believe in an afterlife will experience an afterlife. But you are causing the experience yourself. If you are controlled by your mind, when you leave your body, your mind creates an astral world. A causal world, and you have experiences there. But you are doing it to yourself. You have caused this. It all comes out of your mind. When you are free and liberated, there is no one left to cause anything. And there's nothing to become. You are already that. And you remain that forever.
So in a sense, if you are living in a hell, to expand this a little bit, or sort of Dante's Inferno, and you leave the body in that state, you like might talk, if I'm just using this as an illustration to try to clarify for myself or anyone here, say the Bible speaks of purgatory and hell, and if you're a good kid, you go to heaven. So you're saying, in a sense, that whatever state we are existing here, that when we leave this mortal flesh, we sort of become that, whether it's peaceful or in in a bad state?
You continue. You take a short vacation. You go through the tunnel. You see your relatives, people you hate, people you love. Then you take a rest for about 400 Earth years.
Are you pulling my leg, Robert?
No, this is the story. That's the way the story goes. And then you're pulled back into somebody somewhere on some planet. And you go through the processes all over again. It is only when you know who you are
that you don't go through that.
That you don't have to go through that. Because there's no one left to go through that.
Robert, can you say it's like a multiplied oneness?
A multiplied oneness?
No, a multiplied oneness.
You can say that as well. Yeah.
It's everywhere, so it has to be multiplied.
See, the Yani, the sage, is already omnipresent, all-pervading. Therefore, there is no room for the sage to go anywhere. There's no space and there's no time. Because the sage is space and time. There's no place where the sage is not. Therefore, the sage is already everything that exists. So where would the sage go when the body appears to be dropped? There's no place to go. Because the sage takes up all the space there is at the present moment.
So everything we know or experience has nothing to do with the Absolute.
True.
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Every question I would ask would have to be wrong.
Right.
Except for every question.
Now you can give up.
That's the answer.
Robert, in this Ayani point of view, you mentioned earlier something about we might forget ourselves, we might stop thinking about ourselves for a little bit while watching a movie or something. Is watching a movie, losing yourself in a TV, let's say, from the point of view of, is that perhaps more helpful from the point of view of lessening identification with the personal I than sitting around and thinking about yourself in a sort of relatively unconscious way.
It's not really helpful, but it doesn't benefit you at all either.
You mean it doesn't have negative benefit to
it? It doesn't have negative or positive benefits.
But sitting around thinking about yourself can have negative benefits from that point of view?
Sitting around thinking about yourself only pulls you deeper into the delusion. When you watch TV or see a movie, it keeps you from having a nervous breakdown.
You're sort of treading water there.
Yeah.
What about, let's say, is there any difference between watching a movie from this point of view of identification with a personal life, between watching a movie, losing yourself in a movie, and let's say losing yourself in Mozart or losing yourself in solving a mathematical problem?
Of course, when you're listening to Mozart and you're doing something beautiful, again, it's taking a break from thinking about yourself and the world and the problems.
But it's still just basically a neutral from the point of view of...
It's neutral. It's similar to going into Nirvikalpa Samadhi. When you're in Nirvikalpa Samadhi, you are no longer your body. You're involved in consciousness, you're experiencing consciousness. Only when you're in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. But when you come out of it, you're back to where you were before.
Well, you're not saying that Nirvikalpa Samadhi then is the same as losing yourself in a TV movie as far as weakening identification with the personal I.
The only difference is one gives you a taste of reality and the other gives you a taste of being one with the program.
Which one?
So can you say anything about what may happen in the future to one, to these two people, one who may be doing one and one the other?
The person who practices the Vikalpa Samadhi, if he goes deeper, and he or she does not believe that's the solution, that's the ultimate, will go further and become totally enlightened. But the one who practices watching TV becomes a part of the soap opera and begins to think and feel like that. That is the reality for them. They believe life is like the TV program, like the movie.
Well, then how's that any different from the person who just sits there and thinks about himself and kind of spins out his own TV program?
When you think about yourself all the time, you appear to be becoming more dull. Your mind becomes dull. You become an idiot. By thinking about yourself all the time and your problems, and then you have trouble going further in your spiritual quest and your spiritual practice. So thinking about yourself just dulls the mind. It doesn't do anything for you. But thinking about the eye and following the eye to its source does a lot for you. So you can watch TV, identify with the TV, practice never call for some money, identify with that, or sit around and think of your problems and your personal feelings, identify with that. The choice is always yours.
But then I'm still not totally sure, and not all those choices seem to be immediately available to me, but two choices that are thinking about myself and let's say, losing myself sometimes in a TV movie.
It's better to lose yourself in a TV movie. Because you take a break from yourself.
Someone like Gershwin, to just throw his name out, had said that if we saw how bad it was, really down in, maybe I'm not paraphrasing this right, that you really saw how awful things were, in the sense you couldn't handle it. And so maybe what I'm asking you is, if when we watch the TV movie, or we try to get apart from ourselves by going to see some form of an entertainment to get away from our troubles, if we're ready to swallow 40 pills and have Harry Carey on ourselves, is what you're actually saying is you can get out and do something in the world. Any of us could go out and do a little Red Cross duty of volunteering, as you say, doing down, feeding the homeless or the helpless down on Skid Row or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Would you, what I think he's trying to say, if we go out and do something positive rather than just be self-absorbed all day in all of our miseries and our own soap operas, is it not more beneficial to go out and be a part of the world or do something constructive?
This is very true. When you can help others, that's the highest human experience that you can do. It's very beneficial for you because it develops humility and develops a semblance of peace in yourself. So you can go further in your spiritual practice. You're right. We should get involved in helping the homeless or being of service wherever we can be. When we're not working on ourselves. Doing what you said is much better than watching TV.
When we forget ourselves, at the beginning of the meeting you said that like the ego is self-involvement, self-concern. And so if we do help others, then we're transcending that self-involvement and we're forgetting ourselves, so thereby transcending the ego to some extent by helping others.
Yes, it causes again humility and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
and we have humility and compassion, that's a very high human state. So when you practice self-inquiry, you'll be able to get further. But when your ego is too big, and you don't give a damn for anybody else, then it will be very difficult to practice self-inquiry.
So self-abandonment is like self-ignorance, like divine ignorance.
Give yourself away. Get rid of yourself. Do not stay home thinking about yourself so much, or about your problems. If you're in that state, get involved. Help others. Do something good for someone else. All those things help.
Now Bob was asking a question. In many Oriental or Eastern practices, they're always trying to infer that being a celibate is much preferred to being a household. And what you were saying to Bob, I think, is that once you have reached a certain realization within yourself, it really doesn't matter whether you are single, living in the cave, or whether you're married, being out in the world, because you are in control of the situation. Why then are so many Eastern philosophies almost telling how dreadful it is for a man to have a relationship with a woman, or whatever, or to mix a negative kind of energy? When it seems that, at the end of it, it's just, it seems it takes an awful lot more energy to be married to the same dear old lady for 50 years and love her dearly than it is to go out and escape from the world.
That comes from the old school. The thinking used to be, and still is with many groups, yoga groups, that having a relationship is detrimental to spiritual growth because you're too much involved in the relationship. This, to an extent, is true. When you're involved in a relationship with someone, you've got to keep that person happy and always please them. And so it takes you away from your spiritual work. But, as you say, when you have reached a semblance of enlightenment, at that time it does not matter any longer. Because you know that you're not the body. Therefore, what the body does is incidental. It doesn't make any difference. It only makes a difference in the beginning. When you're really working on yourself, a relationship will interfere in the work you're doing. Because again, you have to give to the relationship. You can't have a relationship and be by yourself. Some people can, I guess. But once you have come out of the basic premise that I am the body, and you have touched reality, it doesn't matter what you do. Would you like to read the Annie Mary? Always remember that you are not the body, you are not the mind, and you are not the doer. Your true nature is absolute reality, pure awareness, consciousness, ultimate oneness, Satchitananda, Brahman. You are that. Peace. We have some announcements.
Okay. I have a couple of announcements to make. First, to continue the invitation.